Welcome. It's May 14th, 2023, 14:12 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you. This is a song from 1979, the Doobie Brothers with Michael McDonald on vocals, called What a Fool Believes. Today's study from Wild Road, I've been looking at chapter 9 of part 2, paragraph 2, noticing that there is something there interesting, that is, that the 97 years of the first five kings precede the king called Toser-Tazis. And that Toser-Tazis is a rather unique name. It resembles Djoser, very much so, who is a king by the modern naming system that we call him Djoser, that king. Well, there is a king called Djoser, anyway, who appears to be the same king based on the similarity of the name. And when we take the beginning of Djoser, according to modern Egyptologists, beginning in 2682, BCE, and we add the 97 years, we get 2779, which is very close to the death of Shem. In our chronology, the 2780 BCE, death of Shem. Fascinating. And very, very encouraging for, again, the genealogy. The Bible, in chapter 9, 3, this whole chapter is going to be rather difficult, I believe. But this particular paragraph is not the most difficult, fortunately. The Bible warns us of false stories and genealogies, which leaves us with numbers that work by adding them. Fighting about words overturns those listening. That's a Bible principle. So the names of kings are not as important as the years assigned. Since Dynasty 3 has 197 years, Eusebius, or 214 years, Africanus, in total, and is a duplicate of Dynasty 1, the range of 263 to 228 for Dynasty 1 appears high. And that's given by whom is the question? Well, that's Dynasty 1, right. When we look at Dynasty 1 and compare it to Dynasty 3, if they're duplicates, why is Dynasty 1 so high? Well, it's perhaps reckoned from before the dispersion. We take the Akkad dynasty of Sumeria to begin in 2302. That's another date that we've already established and considered, which is 161 years before the Assyrian Empire started in 2141 with Ninus, actually, right? When we assign 215 years to the Arabian dynasty, which precedes the 2302, which is the Akkad dynasty, as given by Jackson, the 215 years given by Jackson, it is in 2517. We add those two together, 2302 and 215 gives 2517, that the Nimrod dynasty ends, but that's exactly 263 years after 2780, again, after the death of Shem. Amazing. And it's also exactly a Eusebian 228 years after the dispersion of 2745 BCE. Incredible, because there's another correspondence, an exact coincidence, if you will. But not that coincidence means anything other than truth. In this case, it means we've got something real. The coincidence of the numbers is convincing, it's compelling. For convenience and brevity, we should refer to a very frequently mentioned dispersion date as D 2745. In the text, it's written D*2745, just for brevity, to have the dispersion shortened. The word dispersion is shortened to D*. Osiris or Menes ruled before D*2745. Because, you know, the tower was built during the time of Menes, right? So he ruled before that, although we could consider, depending on what you mean by ruling, because the first king ever to rule was after the dispersion, because they didn't have a need for kings prior to that, because everyone was united. But then, anyway, we believe they ruled somehow before, ruling being in quotations, if you will. It's not written down in quotations, but thus it was from the death of Shem in 2780 that they ruled, 263 years, according to Africanus, before 263 years, according to Africanus, before 2517. If you add 2517 and 263, you get 2780. And that's calculated from Sothic alignment in 2772 as 255 years, a number that doesn't really have much significance to us, that 255, but it's 35 years and 27 years respectively is 2772, that is, before D2745. So 2745 plus 35 is 27. 2745 plus 27, right, is 2772. And of course, yeah, 2780 is 35 years plus 2745. So all the numbers add up. The division of land in D slash 2741, the division, D slash, comes 31 years after 2772, consistent with the 30 years given Menes in Eusebius, and D slash 2741 is 59 years for Thoth, according to Sincellus, before 2682. That is 2682, which is the beginning of the Egyptian rule of Djoser, as we mentioned. That rule of Djoser in 2682 was preceded by Thoth for 59 years, according to Sincellus, and 2682 plus 59 is exactly 2741. The 27 years of Thoth, according to Eusebius, is 2709 to 2682, 18 plus 9, right? Because 2682 is 18 years after 2700, with 32 or 36 years for Menes, from 2741 to 2709, being 32 years, or 2741 being the division of the land, or 2745 to 2709 being the 36 years, and the 2745 being the dispersion, but 29 years, 2738 to 2709 for Menes, no, not for Menes, for Thoth. The 29 years, if Thoth had 29 years, then Menes ruled for the 42 years from 2780 to 2738. This sentence is structured a little bit as though there's a word missing, perhaps. The 29 years from 2738 to 2709 gives Menes 42 years, is what it should say, from 2780 to 2738. But it's not written that way, so it leaves a little bit to the reader to discern, which is not always a bad thing. The 224 years of Sincellus from Jackson on pages 233 to 234, a lot of numbers here, from 2741 BCE, those 224 years of Sincellus from Jackson on pages 233 and 234, from 2741 BCE gives 2517. If we add 224, what do we get? 2741, because 225 plus 25, 2 plus 25 is 27, 24 and 17 is 41. So those add up too, once again, based on Sumerian. Now we're only selecting the numbers, the ones that do add up. We're not paying attention to the numbers that don't add up. We're looking for numbers that add up, but it's very frequent in chronology that no numbers add up. Nothing adds up. That's what typically happens. So these are good results, even though we're being selective. Based on Sumerian, that 224 was, or rather than Egyptian reigns, why is that? Let me think. Why is that from Sumerian rains? The 2517, is that from Sumerian? Wait a minute. Oh, okay, yeah, it's based on Shinar. It's based on the Sumerian rains, meaning Nimrod. That the rule of these kings that preceded, it's long before Akkad, in other words, but it's the time that it might have coincided with, or nearly coincided with, the beginning of Egypt, but it was in Sumeria, and it was Nimrod and Shinar, and the earliest kings that could be considered in any way Egyptian or anything close to the Egyptian time period of the pre-Egyptian, before the Old Kingdom even, right? This is before the Old Kingdom Egypt. So it's based on Sumerian rather than Egyptian reigns. Division of land in D/2741. It's amazing. So we can do the calculation using the dispersion in 2745 BCE in the genealogy, or the BG as we call it, or we can do the calculations based on 2741 in the BG, and we still get the same answers. Nimrod settling in Sumeria did not violate the rules of land division, because they're, you know, assuming his start is before D/2741, because D/2741 BCE, which is just 2741 BCE, which is when the land was divided, seeing as Nimrod ruled before that, he didn't violate any rules of the land division, since the land had not been divided yet. You know, there were no rules about dividing the land. Everybody was together prior to the Tower of Babel. Our proverb for today, I haven't yet posted it here on the page. I want to go to Proverbs 1 and 4. Is that true? Wait a minute. No, it's Ecclesiastes. It was Ecclesiastes, actually. You can do Proverbs 1 and 4 as well. But no, it was Ecclesiastes that I looked at in the hard copy that I was looking at. Ecclesiastes 1 and 4. A generation is going. This is it. A generation is going and a generation is coming. But the earth is standing even to time indefinite. So that brings up fascinating thoughts, because I was just watching a YouTube video yesterday, and they were talking about how modern scientists nowadays are claiming that the Big Bang Theory is not viable anymore because of the Hubble telescope and the new James something or other telescope that has gotten newer results, you know, in agreement with the Hubble telescope. But they both agree that the galaxies that are further away from us don't agree with the Big Bang Theory in terms of how they look, how big they are, and how big they appear. They just can't make it seem to work. So if the Big Bang Theory isn't true, what do we have then? Well, what did people believe before the Big Bang Theory? People believed that the Earth and the universe had been in existence for a very long time. Right? In science, anyway, they believed that these things had been around for a long time. Or, either that, or if you're a believer in Jehovah, in the Creator, they must have been created the way they are. In other words, it's still a Big Bang in a sense, if they were brought into being at some point, created. If you're a believer in creation, they had to be created. So, they didn't come about from nothing without a Creator. You see? So it doesn't really matter whether the Big Bang is true or not. But it's interesting how Scientists attempt to arrive at the origin of things based on observing how things are now, which, and that's what they always do. I mean, scientists who are not believers, I should say. Scientists who are atheists, atheist scientists, always try to determine the origin solely based on what exists now. But that, to a believer anyway, to, speaking for myself, that appears to be ridiculous, incredibly naive. It's naive to think that you can arrive at the understanding of how things came to be based on how they are now. That is incredibly naive, but that's what scientists try to do when they don't believe in a creator, right? So if you believe in a creator, there's no worry about how things came to be. We know that God created them. That's how they came to be. So there's no worry about that, about the process of how it happened, when it happened. You know, I mean, come on. Or even if it happened, which is what people used to believe, is that the universe always existed. That's what scientists believed in the pre-Big Bang theory days, that the universe was always there. It was a steady state, rather than that there was a creation at some point. But a creator explains it all in terms of, finally explains, you know, it's put to rest. Our minds are put at rest. We're not struggling always to understand, always to find out, always to determine how did it come about? Because that answer's given right from the beginning, that the details might be obscure, but we know how it came about. It was through the Creator. And also we know that it was through the only begotten Son of the Creator, too. There were more than one person. There was more than one person in the beginning when God created. And the word God is the plural of excellence. So it's even fitting in the ancient Hebrew that there were two people, and that God's name is a plurality, or that not his name, but it is his name in the sense of reputation, God. That word God is a plural word. The name Jehovah means he causes to become, or he creates. You know, he's the creator. Exodus 23. More from the law of Moses, you must not take up an untrue report. Do not cooperate with a wicked one by becoming a witness who schemes violence. You must not follow after the crowd for evil ends. And you must not testify over a controversy so as to turn aside with the crowd in order to pervert justice. As for the lowly one, you must not show preference in a controversy of his. Should you come upon your enemy's bull or his ass going astray, you are to return it without fail to him. Should you see the ass of someone who hates you lying down under its load, then you must refrain from leaving him. With him, you are without fail to get it loose. You are not to pervert the judicial decision of your poor man in his controversy. You are to keep far from a false word, and do not kill the innocent and the righteous. My allergies are bad this morning. When I was blowing my nose for just not hours, but many minutes. For I shall not declare the wicked one righteous. So the one who kills the innocent and the righteous, that's defined as being a wicked one. In other words, I shall not declare the wicked one righteous. By definition, then, the wicked one is the one who kills the innocent and the righteous. You are not to accept a bribe, for the bribe blinds clear-sighted men and can distort the words of righteous men. And you must not oppress an alien resident, as you yourselves have known the soul of the alien resident, because you became alien residents in the land of Egypt. Remember? the Israelites in Egypt, sons of Jacob. And for 6 years, you are to sow your land with seed, and you must gather its produce, but the seventh year, you are to leave it uncultivated, and you must let it lie fallow, and the poor ones of your people must eat of it. And what is left over by them, the wild beasts of the field are to eat. That is the way you are to do with your vineyard and your olive grove. 6 days you are to do your work, but on the seventh day you are to desist, in order that your bull and your ass may rest, and the son of your slave girl and the alien resident may refresh themselves. And you are to be on your guard respecting all that I have said to you. And you must not mention the name of other gods. It should not be heard upon your mouth. 3 times in the year you are to celebrate a festival to me. You will keep the festival of unfermented cakes. You will eat unfermented cakes 7 days, just as I have commanded you at the appointed time in the month of Abib, because in it you came out of Egypt, and they must not appear before me empty-handed. Also the festival of harvest of the first ripe fruits of your labors, of what you sow in the field, and the festival of ingathering, at the outgoing of the year when you gather in your labors from the field. On 3 occasions in the year, every male of yours will appear before the face of the true Lord Jehovah. You must not sacrifice along with what is leavened the blood of my sacrifice, and the fat of my festival should not stay overnight until morning. That reminds me of when the Jews didn't want to leave the body of Jesus overnight on the impalement stake, on the what Christendom calls the cross. They didn't want to leave Jesus impaled, his body, the dead body. They didn't want to leave it on the impalement stake overnight. The best of the first ripe fruits of your ground you are to bring to the house of Jehovah your God. The best you are to bring to Jehovah. You must not boil a kid in its mother's milk. Here I am sending an angel ahead of you to keep you on the road and to bring you into the place that I have prepared. Watch yourself because of him and obey his voice. Do not behave rebelliously against him, for he will not pardon your transgression because my name is within him. However, if you strictly obey his voice and really do all that I shall speak, then I shall certainly be hostile to your enemies and harass those who harass you. For my angel will go ahead of you and will indeed bring you to the Amorites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Canaanites, the Hivites and the Jebusites, and I shall certainly efface them. You must not bow down to their gods or be induced to serve them. And you must not make anything like their works, but you will without fail throw them down, their works that is, and you will without fail break down their sacred pillars. And you must serve Jehovah your God, and he will certainly bless your bread and your water, and I shall indeed turn malady away from your midst. Too many M's in that sentence somehow. And I shall indeed turn sickness away from your midst. Neither a woman suffering an abortion nor a barren woman will exist in your land. I shall make the number of your days full. And I shall send the fright of me ahead of you, and I shall certainly throw into confusion all the people among whom you come. And I shall indeed give the back of the neck of all your enemies to you. And I will send the feeling of dejection, remember the hornets that we talked about, ahead of you. And it will simply drive the Hivites, the Canaanites, and the Hittites out from before you. I shall not drive them out from before you in 1 year, that the land may not become a desolate waste. So not in a hurry. And the wild beasts of the field really multiply against you. Little by little I shall drive them out from before you until you become fruitful and really take possession of the land. And I will fix your boundary from the Red Sea to the Sea of the Philistines and from the wilderness to the river being the Euphrates River. So the Red Sea is on the south of Israel. The Sea of the Philistines, evidently the Mediterranean, is what's referred to there. And then that leaves the wilderness in the north and the Euphrates River on the east, because I shall give into your hand the inhabitants of the land, and the boundary, that is, will be in those four places. And you will certainly drive them out from before yourself. You are not to conclude a covenant with them or their gods. They should not dwell in your land, that they may not cause you to sin against me. In case you should serve their gods, it would become a snare to you. That's Exodus 23. Very informative about Jehovah's laws that he gave to the Israelites through Moses in the wilderness after they came out of Egypt, around about very near to and shortly after May 3rd, 1493 BCE. Luke 13. We did yesterday, Luke 14. And on an occasion when he went into the house of a certain one of the rulers of the Pharisees, this is Jesus, on the Sabbath to eat a meal, they were closely watching him. And look, there was before him a certain man who had dropsy. So in response, Jesus spoke to those versed in the law and to the Pharisees, saying, is it lawful on the Sabbath to cure or not? But they kept silent. With that, he took hold of the man, healed him, and sent him away. And he said to them, who of you, if his son or bull falls into a well, will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? And they were not able to answer back on these things. So Jesus healed the man. Again, he went then on to tell the invited men an illustration as he marked how they were choosing the most prominent places for themselves, saying to them, when you are invited by someone to a marriage feast, do not lie down in the most prominent place. Perhaps someone more distinguished than you may at the time have been invited by him, and he that invited you and him will come and say to you, let this man have the place. And then you will start off with shame to occupy the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and recline in the lowest place, that when the man that has invited you comes, he will say to you, friend, go on up higher. Then you will have honor in front of all your fellow guests. For everyone that exalts himself will be humbled, and he that humbles himself will be exalted. Next he proceeded to say also to the man that invited him, when you spread a dinner or evening meal, do not call your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors. Perhaps sometime they might also invite you in return. The rich people might invite you, and it would become a repayment to you. But when you spread a feast, invite poor people, crippled, lame, blind, and you will be happy, because they have nothing with which to repay you. For you will be repaid in the resurrection of the righteous ones. On hearing these things, a certain one of the fellow guests said to him, happy is he who eats bread in the kingdom of God. Jesus said to him, a certain man was spreading a grand evening meal, and he invited many. And he sent his slave out at the hour of the evening meal to say to the invited ones, come, because things are now ready. But they all in common started to beg off. The first said to him, I bought a field and need to go out and see it. I ask you, have me excused. And another said, I bought 5 yoke of cattle and am going to examine them. I ask you, have me excused. Still another said, I just married a wife, and for this reason I cannot come. So the slave came up and reported these things to his master. Then the householder became wrathful and said to his slave, go out quickly into the broad ways and the lanes of the city and bring in here the poor and crippled and blind and lame. In time the slave said, master, what you ordered has been done, and yet there is room. And the master said to the slave, go out into the roads and the fenced-in places and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. For I say to you people, none of those men that were invited shall have a taste of my evening meal. Now great crowds were traveling with him. And he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own soul, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever is not carrying his torture stake and coming after me cannot be my disciple. For example, who of you that wants to build a tower does not first sit down and calculate the expense to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, he might lay its foundation, but not be able to finish it, and all the onlookers might start to ridicule him, saying, this man started to build but was not able to finish. Or what king marching to meet another king in war does not first sit down and take counsel whether he is able with 10,000 troops to cope with the one that comes against him with 20,000? If, in fact, he cannot do so, then while that one is yet far away, he sends out a body of ambassadors and sues for peace. Thus, you may be sure, none of you that does not say goodbye to all his belongings can be my disciple. Salt, to be sure, is fine. But if even the salt loses its strength, with what will it be seasoned? It is suitable neither for soil nor for manure. People throw it outside. Let him that has ears to listen, listen. And that was Luke 14. And that concludes our study for today, except, no, there's one more thing I wanted to do. I've been looking at this and I forgot to read it the other day. Oh, no. No, don't. I'm sneezing into the microphone. Excuse me. Here, now my allergies are coming back. No, I mean, in the morning is when the allergies usually flare up a little bit. Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk. Micah 1. But let's read this. Micah 1. Little children. Is it Micah 1? Yeah. No, it doesn't seem right. Yeah, here it is. 8. 1 and 8 through 1 and 16. On this account I will wail and howl. I will walk barefoot. And naked. I shall make a wailing like the jackals, and a mourning like female ostriches, for the stroke upon her is unhealable, for it has come as far as Judah, the plague as far as the gate of my people, as far as Jerusalem. In Gath, do not you men tell it out, positively do not weep. In the house of Aphra, wallow in the very dust, make your way across, O inhabitress of Shaphir, in shameful nudity. The inhabitress of Zaanan has not gone forth. The wailing of Bethesel will take from you people its standing place. For the inhabitress of Meroth has waited for good, but what is bad has come down from Jehovah to the gate of Jerusalem. Attach the chariot to the team of horses, O inhabitress of Lachish. The beginning of sin was what she was to the daughter of Zion, for in you the revolts of Israel have been found. Therefore you will give parting gifts to Moresheth-Gath, the houses of Achzib, whereas something deceitful to the kings of Israel. The dispossessor I shall yet bring to you, O inhabitress of Marisha. As far as Adullam, the glory of Israel will come. Cause baldness and shear your hair off on account of your sons of exquisite delight. Broaden out your baldness like that of the eagle, because they have gone away from you into exile. Well, this, I can't touch my nose too much because it'll get sore. This is the problem I was having this morning, blowing my nose. And now it's coming back, but much less than it was, of course. It's the allergy season. But it's not really going to last long, I don't think. I love you all very much. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening and watching. I hope you enjoyed this. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all the necessities of life will be added to you. And on behalf of me, it's Gully and Willie. saying bye for now.